From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Happy birthday to Coast line producer, Tom Danheiser. Happy birthday, Tommy. Last hour tonight, soul retrieval with Sandra Ingerman, but here's what's happening. This in, a story you probably won't see in the mainstream media, and not for days at least, but we've got it. A federal judge has denied a request by organic seed growers and conservation and food safety groups seeking a temporary ban on Monsanto Company's genetically engineered beets. Judge Jeffrey White of the Northern District of California in San Francisco denied the preliminary injunction, arguing that a lack of conventional seeds for a full crop load this year would lead to a shortage. He also said that the parties should not assume that the court's decision to deny a preliminary injunction is indicative of his views on a permanent injunction pending the full environmental review. So the door there is still open. And now it's Honda's problem. A recall including 344,000 Odysseys, 68,000 Elements from the years 27 and 2008 model years. Honda said in a statement that over time, brake pedals can feel soft and must be pressed closer to the floor to stop the vehicles. Left unrepaired, the problem, they say, could cause loss of braking power and possibly a crash. You don't want that. A former Massachusetts dentist is accused of placing paper clips instead of stainless steel posts inside the teeth of root canal patients while billing Medicare for more expensive parts. The state attorney general announced that a grand jury indicted the former Fall River, Massachusetts dentist Michael Clare last week. The charges include assault and battery, larceny, submitting false claims to Medicaid, and illegally prescribing drugs. Some folks in Southern California were awakened early Tuesday to a 4.4 magnitude earthquake centered in the Pico Rivera area that caused no major damage or injuries but put first responders on alert and rattled some nerves. Residents living near the epicenter said that some items fell off shelves and tables, but there were no reports of structural damage to homes. More than a third of the contiguous United States faces a high or above average flood risk this spring, according to the National Weather Service. The highest threat is in the Dakotas, Minnesota, and Iowa. Those areas have already seen some flooding and rivers are rising quickly. Mitch Batras with us from Earth Changes. Mitch, how serious is the situation?
Well, hi, and hi, George. Yes, it's going to be as serious as it was 12 years ago. It's almost an identical snapshot of what happened in 1997, 1998. Back then, 10 years ago, or 12, 13 years ago, when you asked the scientists, hey, what's this all about? Their answer was, it's El Nino. Well, what is El Nino? By the way, El Nino continued through the winter months and went into spring just like it is now. Mm-hmm. So they changed the name. They said, did I say El Nino? I meant to say La Nina. And that's really kind of a tongue-in-cheek. Well, what are these things? What it is simply shifting ocean currents. We have to ask, what's the cause of that? The cause of shifting ocean currents is related to shifting jet streams. What's the cause of that? The cause of that are charged particles, George. I believe the Mayans have always known about this.
Yes.
Scientists today, it's breathtaking for someone like me who's been studying this for some years. At the amount of information that's coming out now, in fact, now this is some inside information. As you know, I have connections with NASA, NOAA, European Space Agency, mm-hmm. and so forth. There are many scientists who are actually nervous that the information they're getting from two spacecraft in particular, the Planck and the WISE, they believe that the information that is coming out is so profound and rapid, they're very concerned of how scientists will be able to digest this and perform their typical scientific methodology.
It's moving that quickly?
It is moving that quickly, and guess where it's all pointing?
Uh-oh.
It's all pointing to the galaxy, to our galaxy, to the Milky Way, to the center of the Milky Way. It's pointing to dark energy and black holes.
Mitch, we need to get together for a more lengthy program with you, because I know on your website, earthchangesmedia.com, you are doing extensive work in this arena with some incredible theories on this. So we'll talk more with you on that. Mitch Batras, he's there for us, and I'm glad he is. Attorney General Eric Holder has told Congress that Osama bin Laden will never face trial in the United States because he will not be captured alive. In testy exchanges with House Republicans, the Attorney General compared terrorists to mass murderer Charles Manson and predicted that events would ensure we will be reading Miranda rights to the corpse of Osama bin Laden, he said, not to the Al-Qaeda leader as a captive. Holder rejected criticism from GOP members of a House Appropriations Subcommittee who contend it is too dangerous to put terror suspects on trial in federal civilian courts, as Holder has proposed. You remember about a month or so ago, I was talking about the Lockerbie bomber. Remember, he was released from a prison in Scotland, and then he went to Libya, and nobody knew what happened to him. He was supposed to be dead of prostate cancer. That's why they released him. He's still alive. Listen to this story. The Lockerbie bomber is at the center of controversy now after it emerged that he is taking a cancer drug that could keep him alive for more years, maybe five more. He's terminally ill. He was prescribed chemotherapy treatment after returning to Libya. He was sentenced to life for the 1988 jet bombing that killed 270 people. He was freed on compassionate grounds 7 months ago and returned home to Libya. On Sunday, it emerged that the prostate cancer sufferer's condition has now stabilized. So there you go. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is defending its decision in late January to approve a new diabetes drug called Victoza, even though animal studies suggest it might increase the risk for a rare thyroid cancer. Victoza, among a class of medicines called glucagon-like peptide receptor antagonists, is meant to be used along with diet and exercise to control blood sugar by helping the pancreas make more insulin after a person eats. So the U.S. FDA apparently may be a little too hasty in this drug. Did the government, beginning in the mid-1970s and lasting till the early 1980s, conduct clandestine operations near Dulce, New Mexico, involving experiments with bovine diseases, anthrax, and other substances as part of a biological warfare research? And what else did they do? You've heard of Project Bluebeam as well. Up next, Norio Hayakawa joins us as we unravel these mysteries on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you a little bit about Norio Hayakawa. Now, he is, and he calls himself, an unorthodox ufologist and activist. He has spent years investigating Area 51 in Nevada, and he says there is so much more to Area 51 than just supernatural and superficial facts made public about this well-known base. In 1990, he also began to investigate the strange goings-on at Dulce, New Mexico, after more than 45 years of researching the UFO phenomenon. He says that a conditioning of belief systems have been orchestrated since 1947 by a manipulative force that is preparing mankind for a future mysterious scenario. The ingrained and altered realities behind both Area 51 and Dulce will play a role, he believes, in that scenario. In March of 2009, he organized the very first underground base conference in Dulce, New Mexico as well. He is also an accomplished musician. Later on in the program, Norio has sent us a few links to his MySpace sites, and we're going to play a little bit of that very unusual and fascinating music. Here's Norio Hayakawa back on Coast to Coast. Norio, how are you?
How are you, George? I'm so glad you invited me to this wonderful program, and I'm really excited. It's been more than 15 years, actually, that I appeared on this dedicated program. I think it was in 1995.
Oh, my God. You were back there with Art during the beginning. Just about.
Yeah, I guess so.
let me tell you, your theories, I'll call them theories just for a moment. In your work, the books you've written and your investigations are, I think, coming to the forefront now more than ever. Do you see that happening?
Well, I do think that people's thought process have drastically changed and began to accept what I call, unorthodox type of interpretations of the entire UFO phenomenon and, conspiratorial angles. So I think that there's definitely a change in more understanding, towards more understanding of what's happening.
You see New Mexico as an important area for ufology and for other events. Explain that for us.
No question about it, George. There's something about this mysterious state of New Mexico. As you know, New Mexico is the fifth largest state in the Union, George, and yet the population is less than probably one-third of Los Angeles, and it's not going to grow drastically, in my opinion. It's going to remain the same. But the unique thing about New Mexico, George, is that I believe that this is where everything started as far as the meaning behind the so-called post-war history of strange lights seen in the sky. It all began for a purpose in New Mexico. That is my conclusion. And that is why 2 years ago, something told me to move from California to New Mexico. And this is where I retired.
And there you are.
That's right.
Now, tell me how you got involved in this, these investigations, your work with regards to Project Bluebeam. How did this all come about?
Well, actually, George, it's a long story.
Well, it's a three-hour show, so we can take it.
Yes. Well, first of all, what interested me in New Mexico was in 1964, when I was still living. And I was a high school student in Yokohama, Japan. And in April of 1964, I read a newspaper article. It was on the front page of an English newspaper in Japan. And the headline in the middle of the newspaper was something like this. Sees saucer sitting on sand. It's about the police officer, Lonnie Zamora.
Oh, sure.
Yes, and the title was Police Officer Sees Saucer Sitting on Sand. And I was attracted to this article, and that's the beginning of my many, many years of serious research into this entire UFO phenomenon. And that really attracted me in 1964, and that could be a secondary reason why I came directly from Yokohama, Japan, to New Mexico. Basically, the reason I came here was to study the Spanish language as spoken in this state, which is very unique. So my main purpose was to study the Spanish language of the Southwest, especially northern New Mexico, which retains 16th, 17th century type of Spanish spoken by soldiers and so on.
Well, the Lonnie Zamora case of Socorro, New Mexico is one of the, I think, best UFO cases ever recorded. Here's a police officer who spots this egg-shaped craft, these beings by it, whatever they might have been. Absolutely riveting. You know, we lost him last year, Norio. He passed away.
Yes.
But what an incredible story. So I can see how that got you interested in this field.
That's right. I have... been reading so much material from organizations such as NICAP, which no longer exists, APRO, which no longer exists. I've done all of these things, and But, you know, eventually I something told me to come back to New Mexico because this is a significant state. And you know, is my affinity with New Mexico. It's a fascinating state. And as I mentioned on my website, and you did mention too, that I believe personally that the year 1947 was the beginning of a conditioning of belief systems towards a segment of society carefully orchestrated for future events. And, you know, I was talking about New Mexico, but did you know that there are more scientists here per population in New Mexico than any other place?
No, I did not know
yeah,
that.
This is a fact. But yet the general educational level of the state of New Mexico is quite low. But, you know, this is a fascinating place. It has the nation's most advanced weapon systems research and testing in the state. It's the state-of-the-art technology, you name it, leading-edge technologies in biogenetics, leading-edge technologies in directed energy weapon systems. These are all, you know, just the tip of the iceberg of what New Mexico is about as far as the military technology is.
Noria, back in the early 1990s, you came out with one of your first works called UFOs, The Grand Deception and the Coming New World Order, which I think is so appropriate today. I want to talk with you about that as well as things that are going on in Dulce. How did you begin to research that? Because, I mean, it is just right now that new UFO researchers are starting to say, gosh, there's something going on. This new world order is moving quickly. You saw this a long time ago. What signs did you see?
Well, actually, back in 1995, I had a crazy video called Secrets of Dreamland. And in that video, my main thesis was that the covert government, if there were such a thing, would have sufficient technology to be able to artificially simulate or orchestrate some fake UFO threat to bring a forced global unity type of a thing to the future world if there will come such a need, see? And that was my main thesis, and the reason I tied that thesis into the idea of a coming global governance or global order is because, yes, that would be the most the ultimate way to bring a forced unity. And so I put two and two together, and of course, around that time in 1994 or 1993, you know, early 90s anyway, there were very few people who were espousing that type of, you know, idea.
That's true.
Yes, very few people.
That's true.
And also, in 1994, I had a unique opportunity to correspond with a Canadian investigative journalist by the name of Serge Monast. And Serge Monast was one of the first persons to divulge what he believed to be NASA's secret plan called the Project Blue Beam.
Now, is he the one who died of a heart attack?
That's correct.
Okay, that's
exactly
him.
2 years later.
One and the same.
Yes, after two years later, after he came out, he had a strange massive heart attack at his residence in Canada, and that was very strange.
Isn't it interesting and fascinating how so many vocal people who come up with these incredible stories and theories somehow end up dying?
Well, that is strange in many ways, definitely.
And, you know, the whole thrust, I think, of Project Bluebeam was instill fear in people and then control them by telling them, we're here to take care of you. we're going to save you, but we need to do this with a one-world army, a one-world government. Noria, hold on for just a second. We're going to go to a break, and then we're going to come right back on Coast to Coast AM to talk more about this Project Bluebeam that so many of us have heard about, and also we'll get into some of these physical underground bases, whatever they may be, in Dulce, New Mexico. We'll be back in just a moment with Norio Hayakawa as we talk about his incredible work into Project Bluebeam, the Great Deception, and also what's going on at Dulce, New Mexico. All that and more next on Coast to Coast AM. The great rocketeer, Mr. Von Braun, Norio, was also talking to some of his own employees and assistants, and he too talked about the possibility of a grand deception. So it's probably out there.
There's no question about it, George. The reason, as I stated before, why New Mexico is so important is because it was in 1945 that the United States, through a program called Paperclip, brought in a number of really smart, really...
Nazis.
Well, actually, that's true. Scientists, these were scientists that the United States government brought, and they were, well, of course, not only scientists, but intelligence officers of SS, and many of them came to Albuquerque and were stationed at Kirtland Army Air Base at that time, and many of the scientists were then transferred to places like Los Alamos, and then also to White Sands.
And there were, I think there were more than 100 of these scientists that they brought here.
That's true, that's true. Plus, what's interesting is that they also brought intelligence officers, because the SS, you know, the officers were very, were excelling in the art of intelligence, art of information, misinformation, and manipulation of disinformation. These were very, very important elements, and in 1947, the United States began this Central Intelligence Agency, and many of the initial, ideas came from former German intelligence officers.
Sure. And I think one of the main reasons, Norio, they needed this Operation Paperclip is they were petrified that German scientific knowledge was going to get into the hands of the Russians, the Soviets. And so I guess they wanted to, you know, grab that brain power and at least bring it here.
That's correct. That's why, not only the in terms of military scientific aspects, but also other aspects of the technology, like biogenetics, too. And so today, Los Alamos National Laboratory is the world's leading edge research center for human genetics, biogenetics, and DNA research. And that is very interesting because only about 65 miles northwest of Los Alamos is a mysterious place, community called Dulce, New Mexico. The name of the town originally was Agua Dulce, which means sweet water. But after the United States government brought in the Jicarilla Apache Nation in there, they changed the name to Dulce only.
I see. Okay. So with Project Paperclip, which I think is so important as we get into what's going on at Dulce, New Mexico as well, this continued. I assume they paid them well, brought their families from Germany, all that, didn't they?
That's correct. In fact, the relationship of, you know, the German technology, German Luftwaffe, you know, the Air Force, is still, in that sense, can be seen in the fact that Holloman Air Force Base has had a large contingent of German pilots. Even today, they have a special, program. But, you know, it's a fact that CIA, which is the successor to Office of Strategic Services,
yes,
came into existence in 1947, and due largely to these, intelligence officers' suggestions and so on. But not only, this, but the NASA and all these programs were, started with the help of German scientists' input.
Do you think some of these scientists, Norio, should have been held up on war crimes, but because we wanted their brain power, we just kind of forgot that?
Well, I can't tell, but it's a fact. It's a fact. And but anyway, in 1947, in fact, probably in 1945, 1946, and 1947, I believe that there were several type of tests of new types of, flying wing type craft that they brought from Germany, and they were tested in many parts of the Southwest. And this is probably a coincidence, but, this is where it all started, in White Sands areas and so on. And, so what I'm saying, and I wrote an article before, that it all started in 1947. Until 1947, there was no such thing as the Air Force. Suddenly, in 1947, the Air Force came into existence.
We also had the Kenneth Arnold UFO sightings.
That's right.
We got Roswell, New Mexico. Everything
started. That's correct. In 1947, the National Security Act passed, and NSA started. A lot of things started in 1947. And as I said in the beginning, that I believe that year was beginning of the conditioning of belief systems aimed towards a segment of the population. But, getting back to this place called Dulce, New Mexico, this is a unique place, George. This community, a town called Dulce, is under the jurisdiction of the Jicarilla Apache Nation. And it's a very large reservation. And the Jicarilla Apache Nation was brought in not too long ago, actually, in the late 1800s. And before the Jicarilla Apache Nation came to Dulce, the Hispanos, the people known as Hispanos, used to live there. Many of them were ranchers, and there are still a few Hispanos that are ranchers in the Dulce area. But overall, New Mexico is a beautiful state. The Dulce area is a beautiful region.
Sure is, yeah.
The climate is great. It's cold, but, overall, the entire climate of New Mexico is so diverse. The people are, it's a diverse culture, and it's a wonderful place to be with the four seasons. The cost of living is, compared to California, is very less, inexpensive.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful state, but it's truly a land of enchantment, in the literal sense of the word. And that's why I love New Mexico. It's filled with mysteries and enchantment. But Dulce area especially is an area filled with deep-rooted cultural and spiritual beliefs.
Extremely, right.
Yes, Native American, Jicarilla Apache Nation. And in fact, not only in Dulce, New Mexico, but a little west of Dulce, New Mexico, is basically the Four Corners area. And the Four Corners area of New Mexico, the United States, have always been a location of high, a number of reports of strange flying objects ever since the 1945, and possibly before that, too.
Now, let's go back just for a bit to Project Bluebeam, and then we're going to spend all of next hour talking about Dulce and what might be there. How long ago do you think they concocted the program? Do you think it was around 45, 47? That's when they decided, let's come up with a grand deception. But did they really plan on it to occur, let's say, around 2010, 2012? Did they plan it out that long?
I think, I believe that they're taking time. They're taking time, and they're waiting for the change in possibly the attitude of the general population. In other words, there's this thing called paradigm. You know, most of the people in the world, they have a set paradigm, but the time will come, I'm convinced, in the future, or even possibly in the near future, whereby the paradigm of mankind will probably shift, either suddenly or gradually, I'm not sure. But until this happens, a lot of things may not be able to be orchestrated.
It is truly fascinating how they play on people's minds, isn't it, Noriel?
It's absolutely true.
I mean, they must have psychologists and psychiatrists on staff helping them come up with ways to trick people.
That's right. It's part of the so-called, overtly, it's called psychological operations or PSYOPs. But, you know, this type of technology and this type of operations have always been a part of the strategy of the U.S. military. And everything basically started, as I said, initially, I believe it started in 1947, but as far as the actual ideas that were formulated to possibly conduct some kind of a future scenario may have come in the mid-50s or in the 60s.
Now, to some who are saying, okay, so what is Project Bluebeam? Let me read just a little paragraph here, and I'll have you react to this, Noriel. It says, one of these plans for Project Bluebeam is to stage an elaborate worldwide faked alien invasion with UFOs that will be seen in the sky. These will either be made on this planet with secret technology driven by craft operated by black budgets and military, or advanced holographic imagery. What do you think of that statement?
Well, I think it's a very, very, I think it's a realistic
possibility
because the United States Air Force already includes the use of holograms in the near future battle scenes. In fact, there was a program called Air Force plan called 2025. In the program called 2025 by the Air Force mentions that the use of holographic projection, from the aircraft or satellites,
sure,
or whatever, that's part of the arsenal of the psychological operations in the future.
Did you see that picture over Norway several months ago of that spiral with the blue beam coming out of the middle? Many people have said that it could be a hologram, and if so, maybe it's a test to the beginning of Project Bluebeam.
Well, I think so. But, George, the first test of Project Bluebeam, in my opinion, came in New Mexico, namely in the Dulce area in the mid-1970s. And that is one of my hypotheses about Dulce.
All right. And when you say test, what happened?
Well, that area was a convenient, it still is a convenient location to conduct any kind of covert operations program because, first of all, it's in the jurisdiction of the Native Americans and, it's in an area filled with beliefs in the paranormal, beliefs in their deep-rooted cultural, spiritual traditions. And it's a convenient location for the government to conduct psychological operations, all kinds of testings. This area is the the most convenient location. And, you know, organizations like the Sandia Laboratories in Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, they have been working on many, many of these type of things as well. And even near the Manzano Underground Nuclear Storage Complex in Albuquerque, inside the Kirtland Air Force Base, was the place where some strange lights appeared in the late 1970s. And I think it may have been some kind of a testing of a laser system, mm-hmm. or possibly a prototype of unmanned aerial vehicles as well.
In your opinion, what happened in 1947 in Roswell?
Well, in my opinion, George, we all tend to think in linear terms. Mm-hmm. We all tend to think in physical reality. But in my opinion, the idea of a crash is strictly a human idea. It's a linear thinking procedure. There's no such thing as crash. As far as I'm concerned, if we're talking about advanced entities. The only possibility of having the advanced alien craft, let's say crashing, is either by purpose or by staging that crash,
mm-hmm.
For a purpose, and maybe even sacrificing, or made appear to be a sacrifice, sacrificing one of their occupants, but, you know, and so on. But I believe that it was staged.
By,
and this gets kind of strange, but I think it was staged by an unknown intelligence in collusion with part of our elitists of our government.
Well, you may be right. You may be right. We've always heard of the shadow government that is above government. As a matter of fact, I'm hearing more and more about that these days, that they, you know, control, they manipulate, they create wars, they control elected officials who we vote for, but they're merely puppets, according to some who believe in this theory. And that could be what has happened, what happened in 47, and maybe what they wanted to do was just to have people talk about the possibility, as we are now, that some alien vehicle crashed, we confiscated it, we picked it up with bodies, because that sure keeps the, that flames the fire, doesn't it?
That's correct, and this is why I have been saying all these years that the bottom line to all of this is that there's no physical, tangible, solid, irrefutable evidence that there is a physical underground base near Dulce. There is no tangible physical evidence or documentary evidence that a physical craft from outer space crashed in Roswell. There's no physical, tangible evidence to any of these, but the belief is that, you know, it's about belief systems, George, and this is why I am, I have been telling people that this is part of the deception, and we don't know what a physical reality, we don't really know what a reality is. We all just think reality in terms of physical reality, but there are other realities that's more real than a physical reality, and somehow everything is intertwined, and the government knows that there's more realities, levels of realities intertwined with everything. So it's so difficult and confusing, and that is why the government will never come up with any disclosure about the so-called UFO phenomenon.
We'll spend some time next hour, Norio, talking about the Dulce and what might be there. We'll get your take on that, and then I'm very curious with your incredible music too. I've got a clip of Showdown at Dulce. Also, Lex has posted some clips of MySpace links of some of Norio's really incredible work, but there's a reason he does this. So We'll talk with him about what we call cosmic wave music when we come back on Coast to Coast AM, and his websites and his links, they're all there at coasttocoastam.com as well. If you need to email me, let's make it simple. George@coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment with Norio Hayakawa on Coast to Coast AM.